There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Wednesday. Live local talk of the hour. Glad you're here. And it's good to check in. And hopefully I'll be doing it in person very soon to check in with the folks at the USS Alabama, and specifically the executive director of Battleship Memorial Park, General Janet Cobb, joining us now. Thanks for your time, General.
Absolutely, Sean. How are you today?
I'm doing all right and excited about what's coming up this weekend. It is another Living History crew drill going on the USS Alabama. Folks that have not seen this before, tell them what they're going to experience on Saturday.
It's incredible, Sean. We've done this for a couple of years, and actually they were doing this when I came to the park. A group of reenacting enthusiasts come and they man the submarine, the USS Drum, and the USS Alabama at 1 o'clock. We have the live fire activities when the Yak aircraft come in and peel over and attack the ship, and we've got 20 millimeter guns retrofitted with propane sound and one of the 40 millimeters, and we've got people dressed in World War II uniforms, and they're defending the ship, and they're doing deck damage control drills, and then they're just aboard the ship all weekend. Now, because of COVID, they won't stay overnight. Normally they do berth overnight as part of their experience.
Now, these reenactors, too, over the years talking with you about this, and these folks are so into it, they can tell you basically who they are, why they're there, what their job is. I mean, they, like, know a backstory. They're like actors.
Yes, and we've asked them over the years to live that story, to know about the ship, to know as much about the positions, the jobs, the ratings, the things that they would have done as possible, because they end up serving as unofficial tour guides for us. And most of those guys, there are a few ladies that come as part of the WAVE contingent, that they know the ship pretty well, and the visitors love it.
You know, I'm thinking about with the mock attack from the aircraft, too. I saw the Midway movie the other night that just, once again, just inspired me to get down and watch this live reenactment again. I mean, this is the height of drama. This is what battleships were seeing in the Pacific Theater in World War II.
Well, if you stand on the deck behind the 20 millimeters, and those guys are, because one of the Alabama's missions was intensive anti-aircraft fire, and one of the three or four Yak pilots, depending on how many aircraft fly, these are volunteer pilots that fly out of Irvington, and they come and do this as volunteers. When they come into the ship deck high, and you're looking at that, yes, what you said is exactly right. It just gives you chills.
So this is, and y'all will open up, I mean, at normal times, but 1 o'clock is kind of like if you need to be where you need to be by
one. Yes. Absolutely. That's when the deck drills and some of the damage control drills start, and then right after that, within a few minutes, the aircraft start to appear overhead. So, yeah, you need to be in the park, and you need to be up on the ship definitely by 1 o'clock.
I'm going to talk a little bit about the history of Battleship Memorial Park and the USS Alabama, because I was talking yesterday with State Senator Chris Elliott about the passing of Robert Eddington, and we'll talk about his service to our country in the Navy and Navy Active Reserve, but also his service to the USS Alabama and making sure that we have what we have now, this fantastic jewel here along the Gulf Coast. Talk about Robert Eddington.
What a loss to the Battleship Commission and to our state and nation. Robert Eddington was such a gentleman. A lot of people don't know, but in his earlier years as an attorney, he was a state representative and then also a state senator. And he actually wrote the legislation creating the Battleship Commission which had to be done in order for the negotiations to begin with the United States Navy and the federal government to bring the Alabama back, to keep her from the scrapyard and to bring her back home. And then 20 years ago in July, actually, he just celebrated his 20th anniversary as a battleship commissioner. He has just always been the voice of reason, and he was so smart and just such a well-rounded man, just a great loss to battleship work, to the commission, and to the state.
See that from so many of y'all that served our country, you continue to serve. I mean, he served in Korea, Navy Air Operations Officer, awarded the Korean Service Medal with 2 battle stars, China Service Medal, the UN Service Medal, Korean Presidential Unit Citation. And then folks like Ms. Reddington and folks like you, General Cobb, you come back and you continue to give back through this. And we literally would not have what we have today right here at home if it weren't for folks like y'all. So our hats off to you. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and all veterans appreciate those kind words.
It's a thing of pride, Battleship Memorial Park and the battleship here. And I know it goes back and forth different years. Alabama's top tourist destination, and we talk about that in our neck of the woods. Of course, it's y'all. On the other end of the state, it's the U.S. Space and Rocket Center. And I saw a story came out yesterday that they're in trouble and said that if they do not get an infusion of cash, they would close by October. That's pretty scary. That's a special thing at the other end of our state.
Sean, it is, and we are in full support of all the fund drives that are ongoing to help them raise money to stay open operationally. They're a commission, as we are, so they're a state agency, but they have a premier program, the Space Camp, that is known around the world, draws globally every year, and so many people in recent years who are military pilots, people that enter the astronaut program, and then people that end up working for NASA, and then in some of the commercial endeavors now where we're sending craft into space, from private companies. A lot of them have had their start at Space Camp where that love is just instilled. And then, of course, the history, and I'm right about that age. I used to sit in school in the 1960s and watch those aircraft go up, those spacecraft, on those old grainy black and white TVs, and we just are so hopeful that the public will respond and help them stay open.
Yeah, and I look at that, and of course, I being jingoistic, I worry about us back here at home. Has the is COVID or questions about the economy, has it diminished attendance at the park from people from, because y'all draw people from every state and I don't know how many countries.
We do, Sean. We had over 80 countries last year, and then, of course, visitors from every state. We're down in June. We were down about 51% from last year. But, fortunately, we are just watching our expenses very, very carefully. We've got a premier staff here, and I want to keep each and every one of them, and they just are just, getting after it, just killing it every day to make our guests' experience the best that it can be. To keep our exhibits and our park and our grounds looking pristine, and we are okay. And we have an advantage. It's that old real estate location, location, location. people we're easily accessed off the causeway and off of I-10. So, and people are. Some of the marketing research shows that the drive traffic, 7 or 8 hours, is what people are doing. They're going places that they're familiar with. So we've had a lot of old friends come back and see us, and we're okay. We're holding our own here.
Well, it's incumbent upon us to come out and enjoy a great event on Saturday. Sometimes we get in the habit of when we have friends or family come to town, then we come out to see the battleship. We come out to the park, but a lot of times people go, "Well, I'll just wait till Christmas when the family comes in." Well, maybe now is a great time to get out and enjoy the event on Saturday, and help out here locally, because I if somebody has not seen one of these living history crew drills, they've really, really have got to do this on Saturday. So, what would you say? Like, from General Cobb's perspective, perfect time to get there, get parked, do a couple things, and be ready for 1 o'clock. Kind of, what would you do? What would you, if you're telling friend or family, what time do we get there?
I think I'd pull into the parking lot about noon. That gives you an hour to get in. Maybe wander around the aircraft pavilion or go to the drum first. Go into the gift shop. Our snack bar is closed because of COVID. We didn't want to get into that problem area. So we do have a lot of snacks and things we're selling in the gift shop. We're mindful of that. But I think I'd get there about noon. And when you come in, please observe our new entrance sign. Of course, the F-4 aircraft is still up there, but the entrance sign has been updated and changed this week. So it looks almost the same with the logo, but a fresh new look, and identifies the park as USS Alabama Battleship Memorial Park. And that's thanks to the ongoing efforts of Commissioner Barry Booth, who's been after me for a while to get that sign done. So we have taken care of that. And I know Dr. Booth is happy, and I know we're happy. So I'd get here about noon, I think. That should do it.
See, and then there's nobody who can give you a better recommendation than the general on that, the person that knows what's going on at the park. General Janet Cobb, thank you, as always, for your time. Thanks for what you're doing at the battleship and at the park and with the drum. And I hope to see you in person very soon.
Same here, Sean. You take care.
All right, will do. That's coming up this weekend. Once again, information up on our Facebook page as well. Living History Crew Drill Saturday. Y'all, do not miss this. Get the whole family. Go out and check this out. You will be duly impressed. 1 o'clock on Saturday. And as you heard the general say, get there about noon. It's probably the right time to get there for the activities. All right, coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Oh, I hope we can get to this quickly here because it's something. When Representative Hank Johnson, remember the worried about Guam flipping over, if too many people got on one side of the island of Guam, is questioning Tim Cook right now. Out of all the questions you could ask about Apple, he's asking about what's in the App Store. Let's go to the live feed here from Capitol Hill as it is Hank Johnson talking to Tim Cook from Apple.
Anyone meeting the conditions, yes.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. Apple requires all app developers to use Apple's payment processing system if those developers want to sell their goods or services to Apple users through Apple's App Store. Isn't that correct?
That is correct, because it's
processing. And by processing payments for apps that you allow into the App Store, you collect their customer data, and you use that data to inform Apple as to whether Apple should, whether or not it would be profitable for Apple to launch a competing app. Isn't that correct?
Sir, 84% of the apps are charged nothing. The remaining 16% either pay 15 or 30, depending upon the specifics. If it's in the second year of a subscription, as an example, it only pays 15%. If you look back at history,
what's to stop Apple from increasing its commission to 50%?
We have never increased commissions in the store since the first day it operated in 2008.
There's nothing to stop you from doing so, is it?
No, sir, I disagree strongly with that. There is a competition for developers just like there's a competition for customers. And so the competition for developers, they can write their apps for Android or Windows or Xbox or PlayStation. So we have fierce competition at the developer side and the customer side, which is essentially, it's so competitive, I would describe it as a street fight for market share in the smartphone business.
Has Apple ever retaliated against or disadvantaged a developer who went public about their frustrations with the App Store?
Sir, we do not retaliate or bully people. It's strongly against our company culture.
The time of the gentleman has expired. The chair now recognizes the gentleman from Florida, Mr. Gates.
Mr. Zuckerberg, in his written testimony, made the claim that Facebook is an American company with American values. Do any of the rest of you take a different view? That is to say that your companies don't embrace American values. It's great to see that none of you do. Mr. Pichai, I'm worried about Google's market power, how it concentrates that power, and then ultimately how it wields it. Project Maven was a collaboration between Google and the Department of Defense that Google pulled out of, citing ethical concerns. And you made the decision to pull out of that joint venture following receipt of a letter from thousands of your employees saying that Google should not be in the business of war. My question, Mr. Pichai, is did you weigh the input from your employees when making the decision to abandon that project with the United States military?
Congressman, thanks for your concern. As I said earlier, we're deeply committed to supporting the military and the U.S. government. We have undertaken several projects since then. We do take our employees' input into account, but it's one input. We make decisions based on a variety of factors. As a company, we were new in the cloud space at that time. Since then,
thank you. That's a sufficient answer that you did take their feedback into account. And in fact, some of your Googlers have recently sent you a letter where they've asked you to exit other partnerships as a consequence of ethical concerns. They've asked you to stop doing business with American law enforcement, saying that police broadly uphold white supremacy and that Google should not be engaged in any services to police. And as you well know, you provide some of the most basic services to police, like email, but you also provide services that help keep our cops safe when they're doing their job. And so my question is, here in front of Congress and the American people, will you take the pledge that Google will not adopt the bigoted anti-police policy that is requested in the most recent letter?
Congressman, we have a long track record of working with law enforcement when it is supported by due process and the law. We push back against overbroad requests. We are transparent about the requests we get, but we have a long history of following the law and cooperating with law enforcement.
I understand the history. I'm asking about the future. To the law enforcement that are watching today, can they rest assured that under your leadership, Google will not adopt these bigoted anti-police policies?
Congressman, we are committed to continuing to work with law enforcement in a way that's consistent with law and due processes in the U.S.
Well, I greatly appreciate that, and I know that will be very comforting to the police who utilize your services. You mentioned earlier in the discussion about China that your engagement in China was very limited, but yet Google has an AI China Center. The Chinese Academy of Sciences has published a paper saying that enhanced the targeting capabilities of China's J-20 fighter aircraft. You collaborate with Chinese universities that take millions upon millions of dollars from the Chinese military. Matter of fact, one of your Googlers, Fifi Li, while under your employ, was cited in Chinese state media saying, "China is like a sleeping giant. When she wakes, she will tremble the world." The former Secretary of Defense, Mr. Shanahan, said that the lines have been blurred in China between commercial and military application. And as Mr. Buck cited, General Dunford says that your company is directly aiding the Chinese military. And Peter Thiel, who actually serves on Mr. Zuckerberg's board at Facebook, said that Google's activities with China are treasonous. He accused you of treason. So why would an American company with American values so directly aid the Chinese military but have ethical concerns about working alongside the U.S. military on Project Maven? And I understand your point about cybersecurity and those things, but Project Maven was a specific way to ensure that our troops are safe on the battlefield. And if you have no problem making the J-20 Chinese fighter more effective in its targeting, why wouldn't you want to make America as effective?
Congressman, with respect, we are not working with the Chinese military. It's absolutely false. I had a chance to meet with General Dunford personally. We have clarified what we do in China compared to our peers. It's very, very limited in nature. Our AI work in China is limited to a handful of people working on open source projects, and happy to share and engage with the office to explain our work in China further.
Gosh, I mean, when the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff says that an American company is directly aiding China, when you have an AI center, when you're working with universities, and when your employees are talking about China trembling the world, it seems to really call into question your commitment to our country and our values. I see my time's expired. I hope we have an additional round, Mr. Chairman.
I thank the gentleman. I now recognize the gentleman from Maryland.
All right, so a little bit of what's going on Capitol Hill right now. A nice compare and contrast. So Representative Gates asking about Alphabet and Google's interaction with the Communist Chinese. But before that, we had Hank Johnson talking about what's up in the App Store with Apple. Tech giants, everybody's coming after them, Democrats and Republicans both. Just kind of different level questions. Hey, how tall you are may factor in for your chances of getting coronavirus. Got that story and a whole lot more when we come back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Wednesday. Why don't y'all say hello to Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Let's check in and see what's up this Wednesday afternoon. Hey, Angelo.
Hey, man. How are we doing today?
Doing good. And I do want to talk some precious metals with you here and some of what we've been seeing in the news. But first, I wanted to remind folks that we're always talking about things we can buy there. But y'all are buying from us as well. Plus, you got those free appraisals.
And we've been very busy over the last several days. A lot of people have been profit-taking off of the rise in gold and silver prices. So if you've got a gold or silver collection, maybe you've got some sterling silver flatware or serving pieces, some old jewelry laying around somewhere, we're buying all of those types of things right now.
All right. So that process is just come in, sit down, roll it out, and you'll sit there with us, kind of go through it and tell us what we got.
Yes, sir. And it can be everything from one or two pieces take a couple minutes to a large collection might take a while. We had a couple come in yesterday with three giant totes full of things. They went ahead and just left those, came back later, and we had the appraisal ready and done, and they walked away with a nice check.
All right, and of course, it's easier to get that nice check right now with those gold and silver prices. Talk about gold. Wow, it's been something.
Yeah, gold and silver have been jumping. Right now, silver is holding somewhere in the $24 an ounce range. Gold is holding at $1,900 and climbing. So a lot of people are getting very excited, and it's been very busy on the metals market.
Now, and you've been talking over time about that ratio between gold and silver. So it is tightening up now? It's getting a little more in line?
It's tightening up significantly. Gold had actually run up to in the $1,800 range, and silver was sort of sitting stagnant. Then all of a sudden, you know, within the last probably 10 days, silver ran up from $19 an ounce to as high as $26 an ounce. Now it's dropped back down to around 24. So that gold to silver ratio is in the 80s. Where it wasn't that long ago, Sean, you and I were talking, and it was in the 100, 120 to 1 range.
All right. This is an education we all need to get right now or before this happens again in the future. So tell people how to come find you, check out the great items you have in the store, and get some education while we're there.
Yeah, we're in Midtown at 2204 Government Street. Of course, you can check us out online and check out the podcast as well, mobilebaycoins.com. And you know, any questions, check us out on Facebook and Instagram. You can see some of the cool new stuff that's coming in.
Thank you, Angelo.
Have a good one, Sean.
Hey, you too. Angelo checking in from Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. A couple things going on. Number one, kind of watching this grilling. I don't know why they continue to go back. The tech titans, they're calling them, testifying on Capitol Hill, but they do. They go back. Zuckerberg's been in a couple times. Now it's representatives from, Google, you've got Facebook, you've got Twitter there. Is Dorsey there? I didn't see if he was there.
No Dorsey. You've got four. You have Facebook and Zuckerberg, Alphabet, which is Google, and their leader, Bezos, and Amazon.
And then Apple.
And then Apple with Tim Cook. And it's interesting. You kind of noted it there, and I think most of us kind of got the gist, just with two separate representatives doing the questioning there. The Democrats seem to be going at this, and maybe some Republicans too, but wondering about monopolies and how big these businesses are. And even if you look back, I guess, towards the beginning of this, Nadler got this thing started just like he did yesterday. Hopefully he wasn't in an accident today, a car accident like he was yesterday.
Right.
But he kind of started, they said, by giving a history of the early railroad monopoly and how they ended up eventually regulating that, how Congress started doing that. And then, of course, Jim Jordan, who, man, over the last couple years during these hearings, any hearing, he seems to be the all-star for the GOP. But he pretty much right out of the gate, he said, I'm going to cut to the chase. Big tech is out to get conservatives. That's not a suspicion. That's not a hunch. That's a fact. And he was talking about how Daily Caller, how they were removed from Google and Breitbart, I guess.
Breitbart as well, yeah.
Yeah, and how Google was talking about censoring the Federalists. So, and he even there mentioned Twitter censoring the president's account for some of the tweets from the president. Of course, as we just mentioned, Jack Dorsey not in attendance. So when they
Let me just run this by here, and I would love to know what y'all think. I want to know what Dalton thinks on this as well. But yeah, you're right. It's a monopoly question, but to the Democrats, it's the monopoly of revenue that bothers them, or you know how they feel like they're keeping more revenue. Like people don't have a chance. In other words, these tech companies are being competitive and defensive in the business sphere. At the same time, the conservatives are worried about the monopoly of information, and that leans so far left, it would be like that island of Guam that Hank Johnson worried was going to flip over. You have tech folks that are liberal, and through omission and commission, they definitely give a left bent to those social media platforms. And so the monopoly is the issue on, I guess, for both parties, but it's just a monopoly of different things.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's come up yet for the Democrats in this hearing, but I'm sure they're going to ask Zuckerberg about selling ads and being manipulated by other countries, especially with the Russia report that we've been talking about for years now. So I'm sure they'll hit that a little bit. But that does seem to be the issue, that more Republicans feel that these big tech companies are so huge, and their politics, usually over there on the West Coast, are so slanted left that they're able to manipulate these elections. Maybe not even outside interference, but just what those people that decide what you see on your screen, how much power they have.
But that's because people let that happen, right? I mean, if we want to turn this around and say, and if it was the other way around, it was conservative thought, there'd be a bunch of people out there that'd be rah, rah, rah. So let me point out that you don't have to do what you're told by social media. You don't have to use the social media platforms out there, right? I mean, there's no requirement. And if you don't think government on both sides wants to somehow not just regulate, but I would say in the case of some, to make social media a utility, right? They want to regulate it like a utility, have it something that would come under the Public Service Commission. So even if you don't like what's happening, whether it's deplatforming or censoring of conservative voices, or the rough play in the business scape of these social media companies, these tech companies, realize the government wants to regulate it because they're scared that this is more powerful than they are. And so is it, if you have the information, if you know, that's my thing, if you know that the information coming across your social media platform can be slanted, you're not getting the full story, you're only getting part of the story, there's stories you're not even getting, beyond just that information, do you think we need to move into having the federal government regulate these like a utility, like power or water? Or, is this, and we're not talking about internet and the providing just internet, we're talking about the platforms on the internet. There's a big push here. You can don't have to read too far between the lines that they would like to regulate these things. So think about that. Even when it tees off conservatives that conservative voices aren't being heard on this, does that mean that you want the federal government taking this over to tell a private business what to do?
No, and I can imagine that now. I mean, just think of the immediacy and what some of these companies provide. I mean, with Google, let's say they weren't slanting anything and they just work as you traditionally expect Google to work. You search one word and you can even misspell that word, and then it pretty much knows what you're going for. It works just amazingly. And then Amazon, I mean, they're delivering things, maybe not in this area, but you order something and you can get it the same day from Amazon. Think about what we've been dealing with the federal government here and trying to get stimulus checks and how long it takes to roll those out, and how when the federal government gets involved, things seem to immediately have lots of issues. So if they started, getting involved in these businesses that are huge, and they do have people that are slanted politically one way or the other, then that would spell some big trouble on the horizon. And then I think another big part of this too is China, and we just heard Matt Gaetz asking the Google CEO about
now that's a little more interesting to me.
Yeah, and their connections with China, and he said, well, we do help a lot here in America. He mentioned that that Google helps the Pentagon not get cyber attacks. They're helping to defend them from things like that. But Gaetz, he laid something out there, and I haven't done much investigating on that, but if Google really is helping the Chinese military and come back to these shores and they're actively fighting the U.S. government, what does that say about, regardless of what they come in and say in these hearings, and they're all bowing and kissing the feet of the government here because that's exactly what they feel they have to do.
Because they just want to, they do what businesses do. People always say, those horrible businesses that just want to make money. That's what businesses are supposed to do. That's why they unlock the doors. Businesses aren't, you know, there to be a moral conscience for somebody. They're there to make money for shareholders, for the owners. That's what they do. That's what they're supposed to do. The second they stop doing that, they'll fall apart. They've lost their way.
So if they don't have those morals, then the Democrats here will say we need to provide some incentive for them to act on the morals of Americans. If they're going to put their headquarters here and they're going to skirt all these taxes through loopholes, then why shouldn't they be helping us more than they're helping China or more than they're helping other countries?
Well, no, and I agree you want to push them to, I mean, if they are an American company and they're taking information, right, and they're helping what is the enemy of the United States with that info, that's one thing. But you know, I'm looking through all the people on the text line. Somebody, they need to rein in these companies, they need to keep these companies in check. Why? Would y'all say that? Is it just the information thing? Because you're not saying that about a steel company out there, right? You're not saying that about a Caterpillar company out there. You're not saying that about whomever else it is. In this case, it's the information. Now, do they have a requirement? And this is the tough thing. Believe me, I mean, we're the kind of, company that could be negatively impact on our social media platforms by the stories we put up, the conservative stories we put up, or search engines through Google for our website because of conservative stories we put up. At the same time, I have to be fair about this and say, do they have a responsibility? Now, there's a difference here. I agree when you talk about helping China doing this, but do they have a responsibility to have an equal number of conservative stories and or liberal stories? I mean, we're going back to the question that what was done with deregulation during the Reagan administration for the Fairness Doctrine, where a radio station had to have X number hours of liberal programming, X number hours of conservative programming. We're turning around, and just because you don't like the outcome right now, you're demanding these companies have a new set of rules put in there. And I don't think I think you have to stay open minded. It tees me off too, but saying that, okay, because we don't like this outcome right now, the government needs to step in and take over this and regulate what's out there. Well, what when it's somebody else in the White House, right? What is when somebody else is controlling the House of Representatives? What do you want it to be then? So, I mean, and see, Jason says this is good. Jason says the steel company isn't suppressing limiting information they don't agree with. No, because that's not their business. But as long as you know that the social media platform's doing that, I know this is unpopular, folks, but they should have the right to do it. They should have the right to go out there, and then you should have a marketplace that reacts, and people should go elsewhere. It's incumbent upon you. You don't have to go to Facebook, right? You don't have to go to Twitter. You don't have to go to Instagram. You don't have to go, what is the other, TikTok, mm-hmm. which I don't know how to TikTok yet, but one day I will. You don't have to do that. You don't have to do that to get through your life. It's not like they're withholding bread and water from you. It's not like they're limiting your First Amendment rights just because you can't do it on a Facebook page. Believe me, in the spirit of the of what's going on here, I understand what you're saying. And the silencing, I'm one of those voices that would be muffled or curtailed there through this. At the same time, you have got to be a fair-minded person and say, do these businesses, even if I don't like their politics, have the right to be able to do this out there? Is it the responsibility of the business that they've been so successful that everybody's dependent on these social media platforms to tell them what's up? So I have to get, 10 calls in a week because something came out on Facebook that somebody sent, and the guys say, oh, well, this is real. I saw it on Facebook. Is it incumbent upon the business there to regulate all that and make sure it's balanced? And at what ratio is it supposed to be balanced? Or is it incumbent upon you, the person that takes in the information, to use multiple sources and great live local radio, like this radio station, to figure these things out on your own? Or start another platform that comes up that does it the way you want to do it? Is it just because, it's your ox getting gored that now is the time to regulate these folks? I want y'all to continue to think about this. And yes, there's things that need to be, like Dalton talked about. I mean, if they're what they're doing with China, this is of interest to me. Those things around the edges, absolutely. But when it comes just to the content of what's provided on those social media platforms and what they let through and they don't let through, they don't have to let anything through. They're a business. It's not the federal government. doing this. So, well, we'll talk about this with you when you get back.
And I do love one tweet I saw earlier. Someone was saying, can you imagine if Steve Jobs was still around for this? And he would probably just walk right into the room and say, hey, you, that phone you're holding there, all of you, those iPhones, I invented those. Think of where we'd be if I hadn't invented the smartphone. Steve Jobs, he probably would have put a bit of a different twist on this than Tim Cook, our own Tim Cook.
Yeah, most likely. All right, coming right back. We'll hear from you at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 154 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Wednesday. Maybe we could vote this one online. Dalton, I heard you talked to these folks earlier, and they bombarded my email. They want to come on the show to talk about cavities in the time of COVID-19. And they've sent me yet another email, Dalton. I've gotten like five emails from these people. They're like, why haven't you called me back? I could be on the show today to talk about, and there's a national group, first of all, which, like, if you're local, you're Alabama, I pay a lot more attention. A national thing, they're booking a 10-minute window to talk about COVID-19 and how it may, your habits during COVID, how this could affect your teeth and gums.
Maybe.
Y'all can vote online. Vote online on the text line. Should I book the interview with the people talking about oral health during coronavirus? These people, I mean, it's like five emails today from them.
Yeah, maybe with more people working from home, there's been less oral health. People feel like
Why? You can brush your teeth right there at the house. You're like walking by the bathroom with the toothbrush all the time. You brush more.
Yeah, I would argue with the masks on, everyone now knows what their breath smells like. So there should be more fresh breath than ever with all the mask ordinances around.
All right, let's go to the phones. Dan is in Daphne up first. Hey, Dan.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing good, man. Thanks for the call.
Okay. I've been watching American politics for decades now. And I'd like to point out that the problem here is not the big companies and what's going on with data. The problem that's going on is that the congressmen and senators are not getting their just due. And it's a quid pro quo kind of situation that we have. Back in the World War II, Congress voted to limit the term for the president to two terms, to 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
But they never voted for that for themselves. And as a result, right, you've got congressmen and senators who've been in Congress for decades, living on $170,000 a year now after the most recent pay raise.
But I thought it was $174,000, but I don't know. It's all, yeah,
there are
just $4,000.
They are multi-millionaires, and some are even billionaires. Now, how did that happen? Well,
we've talked about this before, but tell me how this directly relates with the tech giants here. Is it that they're not... That the members of Congress have not gotten enough genuflecting from the Tim Cooks of the world, that they feel like they got to call them in front of the nation and grill them?
It's not genuflecting. It's dollars, buddy. And this is how they became so wealthy. It's because whichever segment of society they happen to be beating on right now... you know, the lobbies come in and contribute to the campaign chests and that sort of thing. And, you know,
so you don't think they're giving enough money? Are they giving any, or they're just not giving enough?
That's exactly right.
Well, very good. And with that, we'll wrap up. What do you think? I mean, it's a 10-minute interview, Dalton. I mean, it's your oral health in the time of coronavirus. He is fifth email today. Said, I called the newsroom, and you still haven't gotten back with me on this, with the expert. Should I book this thing? I don't know. Y'all let me know on the text line. All right, Feinbaum is next.